Welcome, pudding people, to another episode of Everybody Loves Pudding. We are your hosts, Richard Geiger and Ken Seymour.
Yes, we've got a baconator of things to talk about today. Right?
If only we had a sponsor like Wendy's, that would be wonderful. We wouldn't have to talk about our Patreon quite so much.
Yeah, that'd be great. And maybe get some fries every once in a while.
Oh, that would be... They pay us in burgers and fries. That almost would be worth it.
It'd be palatable.
Yeah, I could deal with it.
Maybe get a Frosty every now and then.
Oh, that'd be good. Now, I know you think after that intro that we're going to be talking about food in this episode, but alas, no.
Mental food.
We're going to be continuing our journey through the years, talking about the intersection of comic books and comic strips with other media, specifically television and television-like contraptions. Back in 92, it was pretty much still just television, but eventually we'll get into the streaming services and such.
We'll take a bit.
Yes, 1992 is what we're up to. Now, we've been kind of wending our way, and there have been a couple of interesting things that we've seen, things that we haven't, and we had, limited things to say about a lot of it because it was before our time or it just wasn't the thing or whatever, but...
It's the 15th Garfield thing that was on there.
Right, and in fact, we probably need to go see the new Garfield movie and review it. There's one out, I think,
Chris Pratt,
this month.
Right?
Right.
Oh, my gosh.
That's exactly what they needed, was another Garfield film. Ha ha! The orange cat likes to eat.
But it's the tip of the iceberg that it's Chris Pratt doing the voice.
Yeah, I like Chris Pratt, but no.
He's getting a lot of work. It's weird.
Yeah.
Not bad, because he's cool. But
yeah, no, I mean, seeing him as Mario was a little weird on its own. But anyway, we may do an entire episode about things Chris Pratt has done that are confusing as having him as a choice. But that is not what we're doing here. Let us just kind of clarify these television shows. They can be shows. They can be TV movies. They can be pilots for shows that never quite made it. We generally stick to the United States, but occasionally we might have something from overseas.
Yeah, Ken will cheat every once in a while.
Yeah, it's to keep it interesting. Plus, it's just stuff I find fun.
Mm-hmm.
But we're going to start, in fact, kind of with one of those. only because last episode we did in this series, we talked a little bit about Roger Melly, based on Viz Magazine.
Mm-hmm.
Well, in 1992, we got another kind of animated TV film called Sid the Sexist.
Classy.
Yeah, not exactly what I would call something that would draw viewers. At least not nowadays. And if you look at the casting on it, it is amazing that I don't recognize anybody.
No. One of the characters apparently was Mrs. Smut. Pretty funny.
Well, that's because Sydney Smut is the main character.
Oh, that makes sense.
Yeah, so this is just another of those. This is based off of another one of those cartoon strips within the magazine that was basically like a combination of Mad Magazine and Playboy's comic section, in England.
But British, yes.
Yeah. So it's originally, if you didn't listen to the previous episode, the magazine came out in 1979. Detailed a lot of different stuff, but we're not going to talk about most of this because primarily we haven't seen this, we're not going to see this, and there's not really much to say about it.
Not much to say.
No. So instead, we're now going to go into something that is based on a comic strip that I feel like Richard may be familiar with.
Mm-hmm.
Are you familiar with For Better or Worse, Richard?
Yeah.
Did you know they had television animated specials?
I mean, why not? Half the other ones on the on the pages did. So
right. Now, for those of you that may or may not be familiar, For Better or For Worse was primarily a single-panel comic strip that came out in 1979 by Lynn Johnston, and it's just a kind of intended to be a slice of family life and the silliness that has ensued from having kids and growing up and weird husbands and wives and all that sort of stuff. It's just, you know, pleasant.
Yeah. You had, like, what, The Far Side as
right.
a single panel, and then next to it would be this, usually.
Exactly. So they go, hey, you know, we could make that into an entire special, and I wonder if anybody watched it, because I don't remember ever seeing this.
No, I don't remember it. I would have remembered the comic for sure, because right. I'd be like, that's weird they did that one. That's
but look who does one of the voices.
Vic.
Oh, you don't know who this is?
No.
Did you ever watch a wonderful show by the name of Chuck?
No.
Oh, we're going to have to fix that. My word. Chuck is, in terms of fun sci-fi television shows, one of the best. And has a fantastic cast.
Chuck.
One individual being part of it. Is Vic Sahay. He's also in Good Will Hunting as one of the students. If you'll remember when Good Will, does the whole thing in the hallway and figures out the problem.
I've
see
never
that?
Seen it, and I don't
what?
Want to. Yeah.
What? No. No. Why? No. What? Why? That's one of the best films ever made.
I have zero interest in watching that movie.
Whoa. We're going to have a conversation about that later. What is going on? I am.
Yeah.
I'm supremely. Is it because of Ben Affleck or Matt Damon?
Yeah. What was the other one they did with the cards and the gambling and the stuff?
Rounders?
Yeah. I don't really care.
Whoa!
About that.
Oh, I'm going to tie you down and show these to you. That sounded bad. I will make you. We will find a way for you to watch these films. Oh, man.
Yeah, never had a draw for me.
Well, for Rounders, if you're not like a fan of poker, then yeah, film may not be all that interesting to you. That I can kind of get. But Good Will Hunting, oh, you're missing a classic. I mean, Robin Williams can carry pretty much any film to begin with, but that film, chew, no, that was amazing. But Vic Sahay, great actor, funny dude, a really, really funny guy. So having him do a voice for this, I thought was pretty entertaining. And I don't know who this is off the top of my head, but I love the name. That does the voice of John Patterson. His name is Terrence Scammell.
Or was it
Scammell?
Scammell.
But he's done a few voices here and there. But that's just, I'm thinking, Terrence Scammer. No, that's not good. So I've never watched this special. Never really intend to watch this special.
Nope.
Instead, we could watch, For Better or Worse, A Christmas Angel.
Oh, my gosh.
Came out the same year. Hey, look. Same voice actors.
It's the same exact cast. Weird.
No, who would have thought? Never would have thought. Okay. Oh, yeah. We're going to have a little conversation. This may be an upcoming episode. Oh, my word. Yeah, I can forgive Rounders, but that's...
It's like the Titanic. I don't want to watch that movie.
I don't want to watch Titanic either, but that's kind of understandable. We know what's going to happen. It's already happened. The boat sinks. Maybe somebody painted somebody, and I don't care. But no, the Good Will Hunting, that's psychology and mathematics and science and...
And Hunting?
Not so much.
Mm.
His name is Hunting.
Ah, I see.
Yeah.
Is it Will Hunting?
Will Hunting. Yeah. So, you know, there's the wordplay. But it's excellent. It is a truly excellent film. Anyway, no, I'm getting sidetracked. Sidetracked. For Better or Worse, couple of little movies that came out in 1992. All right. We've gotten past all the films, the single release things that we haven't watched and we're not going to watch. Let's get to our first series.
Ooh.
The Fish Police.
Excuse me?
The Fish Police. One season. Now, The Fish Police was based upon the comic of the same name, Fish Police. If you look at some descriptors, it's pretty well done. I love Toonpedia does a really good job of kind of giving a synopsis that the turtles, very popular. What can we do that's like the turtles and capitalize? And this is an example of a comic that kind of was a similar take, something slightly different, but, you know, with police.
And fish.
And fish. So, something that most people would not have known is from Fish Wrap Productions in 1985, created by Steve Monkhues. I've read a lot of comics. This is not one of them. I am not familiar with the Fish Police.
Yeah, the Fish Police. That's that'd be pretty funny if it was P-H-I-S-H.
Oh, and the whole cartoon was just playing the same song for 30 minutes?
Yeah, exactly.
Looking at the animation, it seems like kind of a fun animation style. If you're young, maybe you might have enjoyed this.
Yeah, that looks like, so what am I thinking here? Tailspin.
Right.
Looks like that animation.
Now, okay, so source material, who knows? The animation style looks okay. Only lasts for a year. Then you look at the cast. The voice actors that they got for this is ridiculous.
And they went all in. Holy cow.
Yeah. You've got Ed Asner doing the chief of police. You got Tim Curry doing like the main bad guy voice for it. Buddy Hackett, classic comedian, unmistakable voice. Robert Guillaume, freaking, I watched him as a kid in plenty of shows and movies. And just all over. Megan Mullally, John Ritter, Jonathan Winters, Frank Welker. Jeez, oh, Pete.
Phil Hartman.
Henry Gibson's in there. I am just stunned.
Phil Hartman's character was Inspector Seabass. Sea period bass. Clever. I like it.
Yeah. I just, I am, you know, when I saw this, it threw me a little bit because this was clearly not popular enough. They only did 6 episodes. What went wrong?
Yeah. Chief Abalone, Sharkster, Detective Catfish.
And they figure it's like, well, if we put enough talented voice actors, the fact that there's really not much meat on this bone won't matter because they'll make the most out of it.
Muscles Marinara, Mayor Cod.
This is one I'm actually thinking of going back and watching that I never saw just because of how stacked that talent is.
That's pretty crazy. I wonder if instead of doing a pilot, they did 6 episodes as, quote, the pilot.
Did a whole run.
And, of course, it didn't go anywhere. Do we know where this
Where this played? Aired?
Yeah.
I do believe we can figure that out pretty quickly. If we take a look at our technical specs here, the details say that it released in the United States in 1992, February 1992, made by Hanna-Barbera. And where did it go? It usually tells me what it was on. Okay. Well, then let's go over here instead. Maybe my problem is I need to go.
Ooh. Tuckered Pub. Yeah,
does it say?
Yeah, if this was a Fox, CBS, NBC.
It feels like something like would have been released on something like that.
Disney, maybe. I mean, it's not a Disney property, but
yeah, it's hard to know for sure. All I can say is I never saw it. I never heard about it. Well, it was six episodes. How could you have enough time to really even know anything?
Only the first three episodes were shown in the U.S. market before the show was canceled and pulled off the air. Okay, that bad, huh?
User review. This is a masterpiece.
Holy cow. Yes, that person saw the three episodes. Then.
Yeah.
So I'm... Yeah, Hanna-Barbera. Well, shoot, man, that would have been... What did Hanna-Barbera, what was that on? NBC, CBS?
Well, they were on all the channels. It just depends what they were releasing at the time. So it could have been anywhere.
So sometimes it actually says on here, too, where it's available at right now. Does it say that on there?
I did not see anything about where you can actually find this now. Prime Video, maybe?
I don't see anything on there.
Yeah, this may be one of those things that if you happen to go to a convention of some kind and you see those kind of questionable looking booths that look like all they did was tape something and put it on a DVD, I bet you could find it in like one of those booths.
The fish police.
Yeah, pretty funny. Okay, so let's go to another television show that also lasted a single season.
Okay. Maybe more than six episodes?
More than six episodes. This one was live action. Human Target.
Ooh, that looks familiar.
The lead in this was Rick Springfield.
Yes.
A musician. If you're not familiar with this gentleman's work, he has some pretty good songs.
Mm-hmm.
But believe it or not, there's actually a remake that just came out. of this. Now, Human Target, you would think that there's been two television shows now attempted for this. And there was like another one attempted at one point, if memory serves. This should have been like a really big character, like some, it's not a comic strip, it's a comic book character. Are you ready? He was in five comics. A whole five appearances.
And they worked so hard to make this a real kind of production. They've done it twice now.
Yeah, it's... They changed it a little bit, but... So, if you look it up, the Human Target was in five. He was originally back in Detective Comics 201 as the Human Target, unsurprisingly. He's, would you like to see an image of what he looked like in the comic books?
Wow, okay.
Woo! Yeah.
So, what an odd, like, one-off to pull
and make a show out of. But I think it's because the premise was actually really kind of interesting. So the character, if you're going to be assassinated, will impersonate you to throw off the assassins.
But what if they kill you?
Apparently they did after one season in the original.
Yeah. He impersonates the person so that the people who go to do the killing can get, you like you said, thrown off or caught or discovered.
Right.
How? Watch the episodes to find out.
Yeah, so it's pretty amusing. Like I said, I think that the concept actually is great. Not great for comics, but actually, yeah, for a TV show, sure, that could work.
You got to learn all the background of the person he's impersonating. You know,
you got a little Richard Belzer action in the thing, and Luke Edwards, Eloy Casados. That's about the only names I really recognize.
Rachel Bilson.
Yeah. But that's about it.
I definitely recognize the cover, right? Like the quote poster. It's not a poster, but
yeah.
I for sure didn't watch any of this, and I want to say so. Rick Springfield was in a. Oh, he was in a show. Oh, there was a comic. Louis C.K. has had a couple different shows on various platforms, and Rick Springfield definitely made an appearance. And I want to say this was referenced in that show with Rick Springfield as a character in there, playing himself, of course.
Oh, I forgot he. Oh, he was in Supernatural. How could I forget he was in Supernatural? Oh, that was a good part too. In Supernatural, he played. Now this is a stretch. He played a musician, but he was like a glam rocker that was past his prime, and then gets inhabited by Lucifer.
Interesting.
Yeah. Good stuff. I had forgotten about that. Well, 15 seasons of Supernatural, you're going to forget stuff. But, yeah, so I remember seeing, like, one episode of this show and going, oh, that's whatever, because I was young and didn't care too terribly much. But
yeah.
I kind of want to see the rest of it now.
And same thing. Do we know? I mean, it doesn't even have a that's where because we're looking at Rick. But it doesn't really have a
I think
place,
this was,
right?
ABC was originally where it was, if memory serves. But as far as now, trying to watch this Hard Target show,
no suggestions.
No suggestions. All right. We're doing good today. Woohoo! All right. Well, let's actually get to something that we'll have something more to say about. Now, before we get to that, I've got something I want to say. Don't forget to check us out on social media. We're on X, Real Pudding Guys, and all the other places, you know.
X gonna give it to you.
Facebook and sigh. No, really, check us out. We're always going to let you know what the next episode is going to be if you don't want to have to go to the website. You can check us out on Patreon. Donate a dollar to us like we're sitting on the sidewalk with a hat.
Or 100 monthly. That'd be fine, too. But, you know.
Whatever.
A dollar is the...
That's the only thing we still have up there because we don't want to break anybody's bank.
No.
But we're like the gentleman playing the guitar with his hat right in front of him. A dollar's not much. It's worth it. But, all right. On to a show that got more than one season. Actually got... Two seasons.
Okay,
animated. No. So in 1991, an amazing film adaptation of a comic strip that we've talked about before hit the airwaves. And that was so popular, they said, we got to make a cartoon out of that. So the Addams Family comes back to TV again.
Comes back yet again.
Now, I did watch this, several episodes, and it really was okay. It didn't hit the spot exactly for me, but I didn't hate it either. It was all right.
So here's the thing. I'm looking at this, and I'm looking at the animation, and I'm looking at the characters. There are some recent movies that mm-hmm. they've had for the Addams Family. I've got a review done for one of them, at least. That I thought the movie was actually really good. And these characters look like they... Well, the movie then, now that I see this, would look like these characters.
Yeah. Now, just as a reminder, we've talked about it before, but don't forget, the Addams Family first came out in 1937. It's a long time ago.
It's a long time ago.
And it's been remade into multiple things many times. But one of the neat things is John Astin did the voice of Gomez Adams in this cartoon. You know why that's important, right?
Because he is Gomez Adams.
That's right. He is Gomez Adams in the original show. So that was kind of cool. Edie McClurg is in a bunch of the episodes. One of my favorite little... spot actresses you see in a bunch of films that I just mm-hmm. absolutely love when she pops up. Carol Channing can't can't tell people how important that is. It's a little older actress than most people are really familiar with, but just did a ton. I mean, just a ton of classic films and television shows.
But, you know, someone like Carol Channing and someone like Edie McClurg have distinct voices. Like,
oh, yeah.
Even though we're seeing animated and you would hear these, like you would, if you've heard them or seen them before, like you would recognize their voices.
Same thing with Pat Fraley. This had a really solid voice cast centered around one of the original members of the show. So pretty smart, all things said and done. I remember watching it, and it was silly and it was fun. Mm-hmm. I mean, nothing to really, you know, exclaim, oh, this is the best thing ever about, but you know, it was just a good time. And this is one of those television shows that you might actually be able to find out there somewhere. It doesn't tell us where to go see it.
Are all these things just like randomly not available now? I wonder.
I wonder if they stopped making suggestions is what happened.
Well, that could be.
But, another Hanna-Barbera production. And, so pretty cool. I enjoyed it. All right. But I don't have much to say about it again.
No, if you're an Addams Family fan, this is one of many things that they've had out that, generally speaking, is pretty successful.
Right. So how about a television show, another live-action adaptation? This time a live-action adaptation of a comic strip that nobody would have ever thought was based on a comic strip if you watched it as a kid. And I'm talking about Beakman's World.
Beakman.
So I don't know if you ever watched this.
Yes.
But, a lot of people talk about Bill Nye, the Science Guy, and all that sort of stuff. But
watched both of them.
This is along that kind of vein. This was actually based on a comic strip called You Can with Beakman and Jax.
Interesting.
Came out. 1 year before the show did. So they capitalized on that stuff fast. But, it's a very simple science learning show. Managed to go for 4 years, 4 seasons.
Yeah, and I think because both of those shows that we talked about, Bill and I, we talked about Beakman's World, I think they both have their place. Because this had a lot of, you know, silliness and absurdity, I guess you could say, but all centered around science, obviously.
Right.
So all the experiments, and it generally speaking, looked like everybody was having a really good time being silly, being foolish, if you will. And I don't know if at the time a lot of people had a choice where, like, you could watch this one or you could watch this one. They weren't on at the same time, so you could flip back and forth between the two. But generally speaking, I looked out for these shows.
Oh, yeah. They were some of my favorites. Anytime I could learn a little something about something and laugh at the same time, I was pretty happy. And good Lord, that hair. That's got to be one that's like, okay, here's what we're going to do. We are going to tease the ever-loving crap out of your hair so that it stands basically straight up. And it needs to stay that way for the entire recording.
Yes, big.
Big hair.
Big hair.
But, fun stuff. If you've never seen this show, I have this is another one of those you should be able to find pretty easily. And it's fun. I mean, it's safe for kids to watch, learn all sorts of different goofy little things. Yeah, just fun stuff.
I mean, his sidekick is a dude walking around in a rat suit. and you can't see if you look at this and if you've never watched it before, but the Beakman character has like one of those over the top accents, but like what East Coast accent.
Yeah.
So, but not in a foolish way, It's just unique, let's call it, right? So if you want to watch a show about science and, you know, have it be straightforward, then you would watch Bill Nye. But if you want to be like goofy with it, then you watch this one.
Yeah, which meant I watched both because I couldn't get enough of that sort of stuff.
Oh yeah, for sure.
Good memories. Okay, now we're going to get to the two that we've maybe watched the most out of that were from 1992. We're going to start with a little DC Universe goodness. Batman the Animated Series came out in 1992.
So, oftentimes when it comes to the live action comic book movies, and maybe you refer more to Marvel than the DC ones and the universe, a lot of times people will say, like, Blade, for example, mm-hmm. was that early on show that kind of had a representation of the comics and kind of got things going. Like, that was the beginning of it. That was this show.
Oh, yeah.
Right? Like, this is what really showed that the characters that people loved could actually be presented in a way for everyone to love.
Yeah, and this was the first real instance that you got to see Kevin Conroy just prove that he had the voice for Batman, and in like the voice. You know, people are always going to talk about who's the better Batman, who's the better Superman, and whatever. But if you're going down, if you're not talking about live action, if you're just talking about voice, I'm sorry, there's just no comparison. Kevin Conroy was it.
Yeah. His voice is so distinctive, and you don't have to see images.
No.
All you have to do is hear him say, like, two lines, and you're like, oh, that's... You would either say, oh, that's Batman, or like, oh, that's Kevin Conroy.
Right.
And when you talked to him in just casual conversation, you still recognize the voice. It's not like he has to really change his voice.
He deepened it a bit.
He makes it deeper, yeah. but the core of the sound is his voice. It's just it's so distinctive.
I still love, you know, hearing the stories that he told at conventions and in interviews about how this show touched so many people and really managed to get his voice out there, talking about just a random guy in the street one time wanting him to say the lines from the show.
Mm-hmm.
You know, just in the middle of the night, in the middle of the city, this is this random individual on the street. It's like, say the lines. He was so good. And then to be able to be complimented by Mark Hamill doing the Joker.
Yeah, and we will always refer to Kevin Conroy as Batman, but really the Mark Hamill Joker character is right up there too.
Oh yeah.
Like his voice acting for the Joker, he actually, I thought he had to stop it for a little bit because it was kind of damaging his voice, because of how he has to work really hard to get that kind of just goofy grating.
Right.
It's hard to describe. It's very good. It's very good. There's a lot of distinctiveness to it.
It somehow manages to be both nasal and guttural at the same time.
Mm-hmm. It's very unique. And yeah. Other people have done voices for the Joker, and they're fine. But like this... They matched so well with the aesthetic of the movie, I think, is part of it too, of the show.
And Richard Mall as Two-Face, you know, I watched a lot of Night Court, and so having him listening and watching the show the first time to go, hey, wait a second, I know who that is.
I know who that is.
John Vernon doing Rupert Thorne. You're on double secret probation.
It's just... and John Vernon's done a lot of other voices too, but like, yes, very, very good. There's a lot of people who do things at conventions,
mm-hmm.
and it's all based on this, right?
Yeah.
Like, it's not like these people just go all over the place, but every once in a while they'll show up at a convention, and they did, you know, a couple episodes, but it was such a distinctive character that they did.
Of course, the late, great Arlene Sorkin as Harley Quinn. We've managed to talk to Diane Pershing, who did Poison Ivy. Lucius Fox was Brock Peters. Now, for those that you don't know, Brock Peters is another just legend, a Hollywood legend that just did so much stuff. He's one of my favorite Star Trek references because he's one of the admirals in Undiscovered Country, but he also ends up playing Captain Sisko's dad in one of the shows, and that's maybe his longest running part within any of those things. But yeah, Joseph Sisko in Deep Space Nine, he did great with that, but he's done so many just voices and parts over the years, and yeah, he was very cool. That was one that I always appreciated, and an actor I kind of miss. There's a lot of late greats that did stuff on this show. We're missing a lot of them now. Conroy is gone. Sorkin is gone. Vernon is gone. Peters is gone.
Mole
is gone.
So there's the thing about this show is it had, when I said the aesthetic to it, right? So it had a distinctive design for the vehicles and especially the vehicles, but like the buildings, the vehicles, the look of everything. The storylines, of course, had a lot of introduction for good guys, bad guys all throughout the different seasons. So you got all his different typical bad guys, but the show was so good that they created one, and it's become one of the most popular characters in the DC universe.
Yep.
Simply because of something that was created for the TV show. It's crazy to me to think that that's where it originated at.
Yeah, I'm glad it happened because Harley Quinn's such a fun character, and that was a home run coming up with that. But not only was the style of the animation just perfect for what it was, it conveyed what it needed to convey. It had enough detail to be cool, but it also was very simple.
Mm-hmm.
It allowed you to just kind of enjoy the ambiance. It was more about that feeling that it created than anything else. And the show writing was so solid. This was the first Batman show I ever remembered where you got to have character development and growth. And they revealed why people did things in a way that made sense and allowed, you know, Batman to occasionally show some emotion.
And have, you know, set up of some of those bad guys, right? Like you said, so the character development, of course. But, like, why are they what they are? Where are they? You know, if you're going to have Mr. Freeze in there, why is Mr. Freeze Mr. Freeze? Like, what's he doing? Clayface, why, like, where did the, or like, how did Clayface come? Like, I just remember a lot of these different episodes throughout the different seasons that just showcased that bad guy.
Yeah.
And then later on, that bad guy would reappear. You know, it's just, there's so many different aspects, and it went for, what, five seasons, about 80-ish episodes, something like that?
Yeah, it went for, let's call it forever and a day. But yeah, four seasons, 4 years. And they just, you know, with 85 episodes, that's, you know, 20-some episodes per year at, what, half an hour a piece?
Mm-hmm.
And every one of them, I don't remember watching one and being supremely disappointed. You know, I think I remember one or two where I go, oh, that was okay.
Yeah, there's some silliness in there too.
But that was the worst of it. And that's impressive.
And you can see if you go through the seasons too, things get more refined towards the back half of it. And that's just because more practice, but I think they got a better budget too, just because of the popularity of it.
Yeah, 100%. So if you have not seen this, this is on HBO Max.
And I feel like, and this is just not us saying this, this is probably one of the best TV, like cartoon TV shows based on a comic that you'll ever see.
Yeah.
And the ratings on, you know, something like IMDb don't always, you can't always trust that, but they give you an idea. And 117,000 submissions have it at a 9 out of 10 as an average. So that's saying something, right?
That's saying a lot. So, yeah, if you haven't seen it, give it a try. But 1992 was not just a big year for DC. It was a big year for Marvel. That is the year that the X-Men, the animated series, came out, which we just finished. Well, we will be finishing watching the 97 expansion here as of this recording tomorrow.
Tomorrow's the final episode. So.
At least of the first season of the expansion spinoff. Yes. But this was another one. This was kind of a seminal piece, something that would help shape our thought process on how cool an adaptation in a cartoon form could be.
And I kind of felt that the X-Men characters, the X-Men family, the X-Men group were always my favorite. And this just gave me excitement because I was like, oh my gosh, I get to see a cartoon based on my favorite characters. So I was really excited about it. And I don't know if you remember this or not. There were, at Pizza Hut, you could do things like book it, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But Pizza Hut also had a, they had a promotion where you had to go on different days, but you could get these first few episodes of this on VHS.
Yep.
And I, for sure, we had to go and get pizza so that I could get the VHS copies of these episodes because it was just so killer. And of course, Pizza Hut was delicious back in the 90s. And now,
Pizza Hut was amazing back then. And I still like it. You know, comparing it to things like Domino's, I'll still take it over Domino's.
Oh, for sure.
The thing about the X-Men series in the television side of things, and we haven't really touched on the things that we've talked about so far, but in most shows, they were all episodic. We're going to have this show is self-contained. You don't need to have seen anything before it. You won't feel that you need to see the next one necessarily, and you get your whole story out of it. And the X-Men did not do that. It was a series. You needed to pay attention to the plot. And that I was like, yes, that is what's supposed to happen. That's what drives you to watch more. That's what drives you to really hold it close to your heart, because this is a storyline where a lot could have happened.
And you're right in a certain sense. Some of the episodes, they were standalone. But a lot of the things that were referenced maybe from one season were referenced again in later seasons. So if they went to visit somebody, if they went to visit Moira McTaggart, it was referenced later on. If they had an encounter with the Shi'ar, that stuff was referenced later on. So, you know, Apocalypse showed up in multiple different seasons as the bad guy. Magneto, different episodes, like different seasons. So they definitely carried things over. They would do three episode collections, right? And the thing about this that made it so challenging was this wasn't really at a time where you could just watch whenever you wanted to watch. So it would come out on the day of the week that it came out on, and if you didn't get to watch it, you didn't get to watch it. And people kind of forget about that. If you're lucky enough, maybe you had a VCR, and that VCR, you could set the recording to come on at that time if your VCR worked. And if you forgot to rewind the tape, or you had it at a certain spot and then you recorded over something that you weren't supposed to record over, it was all the game you had to play to be able to watch this. The first episodes and the first season, of course, that was it. And then they replayed him again too. So you'd catch him on reruns later on. But it was really difficult. It was really challenging to have all these episodes and miss out on some of the things just because you couldn't watch it on that day.
Yeah, that was a definite potential issue. But I always have just such good memories of this show, and the entrance, the start was always, it would get you pumped when you saw it, the music, and being the comic book fan, I knew even if they were going to change something or overly simplify something, which they did constantly, the spirit was kept intact. So it was okay. And I knew that they had the best interest of the source material and the people watching it at heart. So it was just, that was nice.
And the fact that the X-Men 97 really just pulls right from this, references so much from this, is just a testament to how much those people paid attention to this and wanted it to be a continuation, not a different element. And of course, the storytelling is more, I think, more in depth in 97 because it really does go from episode 1 to 10. Everything's intertwined more so than what you got in this. But the intro is the big thing. You know, the intro just is, it's an iconic sound. It's an iconic piece of music that when you hear it, you know exactly what it's for.
And I know we talked in a previous episode about the newer show, 97, and we were both admiring and kind of lamenting at the same time the original cast, the voice cast. They got a lot of them back, but not all of them. And, you know, it's like, well, that's good, but I've had since then a little time to look a little closer. And some of it is you can't help it. Some of the people just aren't with us anymore. They mm-hmm. have to be replaced. Some of them, well, their voices have changed. Some of them may not be in a position to really be able to do this anymore. But if you'll notice, like, while we have Cal Dodd that did Wolverine in both, and Lenore Zahn did Rogue in both, you know, you got a change. Allison Court did Jubilee in the original show, did not do it in the new one. But they still brought her back to at least do a voice in an episode. And pretty much everybody that they could, where they did not come back to do the original voice they did, they're in there for like one. So Ron Reuben did Morph's voice in the original show, Senator Kelly, or President Kelly, in X-Men 97. You've got Chris Potter originally did Gambit, did not do Gambit in the new series, but did Cable in the new series.
Oh, so like he might have had one of those where his voice changed.
Right. I'm thinking that's got to be what it is. So, I mean, if you get a few minutes, just jump around between the two shows in IMDb and take a little closer look, and you will see some really interesting things.
And the people that they did get to voice the characters that were different, honestly, they do a really good job.
Yeah, you know? They do.
This, as much as the Batman cartoon is well loved, this cartoon has that same level, right?
Yeah, definitely.
And to have these two powerhouses come out in the same year is crazy. Like when we reviewed all these things for years and years and years, and there's been shows and there's been things that have been good, but right. You know, nothing too crazy, just to have
two of the best ever
elite tier shows come out at the same time is, and from two different worlds for that matter, is pretty crazy.
Well, as we talk about, it's like, well, DC's better at this and Marvel's better at that, but at least for this moment in time, they're both perfect.
And the attitudes of each show is different. The animation style of each show is different. The you know, the overall breadth and scope of what is trying to be presented is different in these things. And yet they're so equally just good in their own way.
Yeah, definitely, definitely. So that's 1992.
What a year. You had A pluses and Fs.
Now, just to kind of give a comparison, thinking about, you know, what movies came out that same year that were comic book films, there was really only one big one that came in 92, and that was Batman Returns.
Yes, with the Joker. Penguin, I mean.
Yeah. So, I mean, it's kind of interesting seeing the juxtaposition of the live-action film to the cartoons. Like, normally the live-action films are going to be often a little bit better, but at least with 92, the TV, the best.
Yeah, which is, you know, there'd been Marvel projects in the past, but I think more DC projects.
Yeah.
But Marvel projects in the past, and then this one is just, I don't know, it's got everybody and all the bad guys and good guys, and it's just, I don't know, super cool to me.
Yeah, same here. So what do you think, dear listener? Did we miss anything from 1992 that was based on a comic strip or a comic book? I don't think we did. Prove us wrong. Now, I will say this. Manga doesn't count. No anime. But if we missed anything else based in the United States, let us know. We'll give you a shout out in the next episode. Let us know which ones you loved, what you loved about it. Take a visit. We are on the Facebooks and the Instagrams and things like that. Mm-hmm. Maybe we should get a TikTok account before they pull the rug out from under us.
Do you really want to go on there?
No, not particularly. I don't dance.
You do some dance videos. Yeah. Hey, cooking videos on there too, man.
I don't think I want to clean up after the cooking videos. But until next time, dear listener, next week, season finale. Hard to believe, 6 seasons.
Season finale.
Season finale. And we're going to be talking about, well, X-Men 97.
More X-Men. Why not?
That's right. We're going to finish up that first season, give our final thoughts, and we're going to be excited to see you.